Good morning, everybody. It's my pleasure to be here and to present some exciting research that's sort of off the presses. We're just finishing our analysis of the findings of this two-year project. And so it's really my privilege and delight to present this work on behalf of my research team. We have a number of us represented at the Public Health Foundation of India, and the title of this presentation is Barriers and Facilitators of Integration of Traditional Complementary and Alternative Medical Providers for Essential Health Service Delivery in Three Indian States. Now, a couple of quick things I'd like to say. The focus really has been on practice and health services delivery, which of course connects to other larger issues, as I'll point out, and also has a sort of rationale in health systems reform work that I've been involved with. A little bit about me. I actually have a background in human rights education, and I did a PhD in public health at Hopkins. And then I was on track to do HIV prevention behavioral research and quit my job to move to India and work on health reform in the country. And I think one of the things that's been really interesting and fascinating about the Indian case is the sheer diversity of the nature of health reform in the country and also the possibilities that that opens up, and hopefully the lessons that I'll share with you as well. So just in starting off, I have no relationships to disclose, but it may be important to point out that members of our research team are both allopathic and homeopathic doctors. This research was funded by a Wellcome Trust Capacity Strengthening Strategic Award to my institution, the Public Health Foundation of India, and was undertaken in collaboration with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. We had a lot of support in carrying out this work, so we're grateful to a number of our field researchers and Dr. Sandra Albert, who gave us particular guidance in the state of Meghalaya. And of course, we have a large team that makes our work possible. And finally, we were very appreciative of the candor of our participants across all the states in talking about an issue that I have to say is under-researched even in India. So I think, in part to sort of justify why I'm interested in this issue, it may be useful to do a sort of reverse history of what's happening and what has happened more recently with integration of TCAM in the Indian context on the right, and on the left sort of key highlights I thought were pertinent on the global scale. So as I said, I quit my job and moved to India to help out with the recommendations of the high-level expert group on universal health coverage in India. And so there's been recent momentum on broad strokes health reform in the country, and TCAM is considered a part of that reform. This is shaped in part by the Beijing Declaration on Integration of 2008, and of course, the major steps taken towards systems integration of TCAM in our National Rural Health Mission, a program that has been running from 2005 up till now. I think a few key features to mention about integration in this context are first that the way it's been thought of is mainstreaming of non-allopathic systems of medicine rather than purely the idea of integration. And what this has meant is that in primary healthcare centers, which serve populations of between 15 to 30,000 Indians at a time, there has been this desire to have co-location, to have practitioners across the spectrum being present. In some cases, there are no allopaths at all. And so having what we call Ayush practitioners at these sites is being seen as a way to address human resource shortages under National Rural Health Mission. And so a lot of the work of the National Rural Health Mission was made possible by the efforts of the Ayush Department, which was formed in 2003, or actually renamed in 2003. And just to point out, Ayush stands for Ayurveda, Yoga, Naturopathy, Yunani, Siddha, and Sao Rigpa. Sao Rigpa is a form of traditional Tibetan medicine. It's actually a family of codified of systems practiced in Tibet and in India, and homeopathy. And so that's sort of an acronym, if you will, called Ayush. And of course, this was in the ambit of the WHO traditional medicine strategy that was between 2002 and 2005. The Ayush department was renamed in 2003, but existed as of back in 1995. The prior administration in India, the BJP government, created a separate department called the Indian Systems of Medicine and Homeopathy. And so you've seen, so I'm going in the reverse order, but you can see a sort of expanding of what these codified systems are. There were articulations in our national health policy with regard to integration of systems of medicine and acknowledgement of codified non-allopathic systems of medicine, and a slight tipping of the hat to local health traditions and traditional knowledge in our 1983 national health policy. And of course, a lot of this work finds very clear and I think very encouraging articulation in the Alma Ata Declaration. The history of these systems of medicine and of local health traditions in India as elsewhere in the world is much older than 1978, of course, but this is sort of a policy history that I'm starting off with. It's important to mention that health in India is a state subject, so different states have different ways in which they administer their health systems and also in which they integrate them. And so we decided to focus on three states in India: Delhi, which is actually a union territory and so has scalar differences as compared to other states. It's also the seat of power. It's our national capital union territory, and you have these national, state, and municipal jurisdictions in tension with each other in terms of integration and really the health system more generally as well. You'll also find in Delhi, partly because it's such a hub for migration, that multiple codified systems of medicine exist. So you will have practitioners of Manzi Khan, you'll have, which is Tibetan medicine, you'll have practitioners who do bone setting work, and so really a massive range. Moving over to the northeast, we found a much sort of ignored state and part of our country in terms of governance in general, with respect to the health system in particular, and specifically with regard to local health traditions, which are really invisible thus far in the policy space in India. We felt, therefore, it was important to undertake some of our work in this state. Things are quite different in Kerala, which has a great deal of historical legitimacy accorded to Ayurveda and also to homeopathy. We have a graduate of Ayurveda here present. And so really, in this state, there is a very different cultural context in which integration is taking place. And so we wanted to capture that in our study. And just to point out, what I'm presenting here is part of a larger study that, as I mentioned, has just been completed on engaging TCAM providers in delivery of essential health services. What we did is a national and state policy mapping, as this is a health policy and systems research project. We also undertook key informant in-depth interviews and semi-structured interviews with four different categories of participants. And so it's this second and third group of data that I'll be presenting today. We took the time to get a hold of health system actors who are very busy and hard to get time with. We also spoke to TCAM practitioners, so Ayush practitioners, but also local health tradition practitioners. We spoke to allopathic practitioners and also representatives of patients, user groups, and communities. And so in total, we had occasion between January and October of last year to speak to 196 people across these categories. It's a qualitative study, so my apologies for quantitatively presenting this information. But just to give you a visual depiction of the fact that we managed to get participation across the spectrum in each of the states from these different groups that we were interested in speaking to. For our analysis, we employed the framework approach of qualitative data analysis. We were lucky to be able to afford Atlas DI at PHFI, and we had four coders undertaking coding of our findings across these interviews using Atlas DI. A larger group of people, five people, did code checking and analysis, and then, of course, in really arriving at what were the granularities of our findings, we were helped by another a senior mentor from the London School. Just to give you an idea of how we undertook this analysis, as part of the framework approach, we had in mind a couple of things that we were already interested in, our a priori codes that already existed, which pertain to what are the roles that people are playing in health services delivery, and what are the experiences and interactions that they're having with other actors, so allopathic providers with Ayush providers, health system actors with Ayush providers, and so on. And in the course of coding, we wanted to bring out emergent codes, so that is meanings attached to integration, so how people are interpreting these experiences and these roles, and also the explanations that they give for the actions that they have taken in service delivery in their particular context. And then, after much debate and passion and ado, we arrived at analytical codes, really thinking about what are the operational challenges and enablers of integration of systems of medicine in India, in these three states, rather. And as we can imagine, there are a lot of ethical issues at stake as well. And so what I'm focusing on in this presentation is really this last piece of operational challenges and enablers, which very often interlace very tightly with ethical challenges and enablers of integration. But you're welcome to ask me questions later about all these other pieces. We were lucky to have very rich data on this. So starting with barriers, one of the barriers to integration observed across states was the lack of communication in providers who very often sit in the same building. And so we had a health system actor saying, doctors generally don't have meetings, but just like that, when they sit on the table, they talk. So then such conversations happen. So, you know, of course, as a doctor, you're really practicing, and the meetings you're having are usually with your peer group. And so it's not very often that you will have inter-system interaction or communication. In Meghalaya, we had an Ayurvedic provider saying, I'm doing my work, that is ekdam, meaning completely asocial type, separated, segregated. And so there was this experience, really, of not really interacting, and in a sense, this person went on to say that she felt rather alienated in her work environment without the communication. And I think this is part of a larger issue of collegiality varying in large amounts, even within a single facility. So we had an allopath in Meghalaya saying that there's close collaboration between him and the Ayurvedic practitioner working in the same facility, and that person exhibited interest in learning about allopathy, and that this was great and very positive. Mm-hmm. In Delhi, we had a Unani physician saying, we can't help each other in any way. They are independent. We are independent. And so this sense, this respectful sense of, you know, you do your thing, we'll do our thing, and that's that. This stands in contrast to another allopath in Meghalaya who said, please, if you want us to work in a normal way, you know, peacefully, just have these people removed. And so you can see a kind of animus in the case of this allopath, and these are people from the same state, okay, in different districts, saying, have these people removed. And then this is another sort of unexpected extreme, actually, for a state like Kerala. We had one allopathic doctor saying, when I was doing my Bachelor of Science, I participated in a strike against Ayurveda doctors' house surgeons posting in surgery. There was a step by the government at that time in 1980. On the spot, the decision was taken by the government because of the strong opposition from the doctors from the allopathic side. And so you'll see there's a sort of organizing on the part of allopaths in some contexts, rather against integration and the involvement of Ayush practitioners in health service delivery, even despite the efforts of the government to integrate. Another barrier that was really quite stark in our observations of the places that we went to was the dissonance between people's expectations of what integration looks like and the reality of what it looks like. And so in many states, especially in Delhi, you have this phenomenon of co-location. You will have Ayurvedic practitioners, and then you'll also have cabins and spaces for other systems of medicine. And it's what health system actors call the cafeteria approach. So you can go wherever you want to. But what the cafeteria approach actually looks like is that on the ground floor, you will have three or more allopathic practitioners in a dispensary, certainly more in a hospital. And then at the top floor, you will have your Ayurvedic practitioner. So this is like the third floor or something of a building without an elevator. You'll have an Ayurvedic practitioner in one small room. You'll have a homeopathic practitioner in one small room and a Unani practitioner in the one small room. Not just that, these people will, there are human resource shortages for them, and so it's not that they can actually be there every day. So not only if you have an osteoarthritic condition and you want to see an Ayurvedic doctor, not only do you have to somehow get to the third floor, you might actually end up there and not see anyone because your doctor will be at another site. And there's not a lot of predictability around that in many of the contexts we found. And so really there was sort of disappointment over the fact that, you know, we're not, the health system is not really able to deliver on what people's expectations of integration are. we found that in the Indian case, across states, high-level political will has really been able to move things dramatically. A very clear example of this, we were quite lucky to speak to someone who has been involved with very high-level policy advocacy, actually helping to restructure and give more budgetary allocations to the Ayush department, rename it, give it more money, give it more prominence within the sort of political space in Delhi. And so that had been an important step. And of course, he was not happy with the allocation that's given. It's 2% of the health budget, which is already a teeny proportion of the spending on health in India in general. But really, it has represented an important step in moving the agenda forward. At the micro-facility level, actually, political will is exercised by the leadership of facilities. So we had a situation in Meghalaya where extensive drug stockouts were taking place, and there was the exercise of political will by the medical officer in charge saying, look, this is important, and paying out of pocket for the medication to be supplied in that facility. And so, you know, where that will exists, there is change. In Delhi, we found that senior politicians are often patients of TCAM providers, and sometimes they are practitioners themselves. And in fact, it's something like 3 or 4 chief ministers of Indian states who are Ayurvedic doctors. So in those kinds of states, you'll see a lot of assistance and moving forward of advocacy, help with sort of logistical and sort of the operations part of providing TCAM care, and of course, troubleshooting. We had a private Ayurvedic practitioner in Delhi telling us that it was only until he was able to the lieutenant governor of Delhi came to seek his care, and it was only at that point that he was able to convince him that the road leading up to the facility should actually be paved so that people don't have trouble getting to the facility. And of course, once the lieutenant governor of Delhi wants it to happen, the public works department somehow begins to listen, right? And so that access is enabled. And it's very important that that's sort of a two-way street. There's personal initiative undertaken on the part of both people at the highest political levels, but also at lower levels within facilities themselves. And this often issues from personal interaction and personal experiences of what in this instance is good relief from Ayurvedic medicine. We had a Kerala allopath saying, you know, my family goes there, so I, you know, it works. And so that, in the view of this person, really legitimized the role of non-allopaths in the system. And then we had this very simple comment made by a homeopath in Delhi saying, if one takes a personal interest, there can be a little something. And this person in his hospital, along with his Ayurvedic practitioner colleague and friend, had really made a major effort to increase and improve signage in the hospital. So as usual, they were tucked away in some corner of the institution. But because of their efforts, there really is a very large line outside their OPD on a regular basis. And they're actually involved with a number of national health campaigns operating out of the hospital. So I would say this is more than a little something, but I think he has sort of grander hopes for Ayush. And then, of course, when we asked people, you know, if they themselves, and this is an allopath in Meghalaya, have you ever visited an Ayush practitioner or recommended one to any of your family members or friends? This person said that, yes, I recommend, especially the kids and all, I recommend them to homeopathic physicians. And in Meghalaya, as in Delhi, we saw that for certain conditions, referrals were being made to other systems of medicine, but only when they were sort of vetted or inflected by personal experience. Another thing that we found is this idea of choice, of patients exercising a choice in whom they go to. In Kerala, we had an Ayurvedic doctor saying, mostly the patients first go for allopathic treatment, and after that, they come for Ayurvedic treatment. For fever and arthritis complaints, they come here first for treatment. In the case of diabetes, the patients go for allopathic treatment, and after that, they come for Ayurvedic treatment. In the case of chikungunya, which is an infectious disease common in India, after allopathy, they come here. And so there was this sense of, you know, patients will exercise choices in terms of, again, based on conditions and their experiences, not getting relief or needing something different or needing adjuvant therapy or something like that. A TCAM practitioner in Meghalaya had this to say, actually, I find the people are out of patience, you see. They want the allopathy to give the quicker result than all the alternative medicines, and they want to opt for the quicker one. Some are very conscious about the side effects of the allopathic medicine. They will opt for this alternative one. They have choice now. So there was this perception that patients will be exercising the choice based on what they see as priorities. And of course, this is influenced by how well any kind of therapy works for them, and also how poorly it works for them if there are side effects and that kind of thing. But when you look at it from the community perspective, you get a rather different idea of choice. We spoke to a bathroom attendant in West Delhi who had this to say. It is like this, you see. For us poor people, this co-location, that is very good. We earn about rupees 4,000 a month. Nidhi, help me here. How much is that a month? Right. Yeah. So we're really looking at sort of poverty line living. 2 to 4 kids are there, a wife is there. Shall we feed them or go to private facilities? It should be there. If it is everywhere, then we poor people, jhuggi jhopri people, that is slum dwellers, get facilities. And so for this patient, the choices between, you know, paying for food and running his family and paying for care. And so when you have co-location in public facilities, you actually have free access. And that is where the exercise of patient choice is made. Just wrapping up here, I know this may have sort of opened many cans of worms and ideas for you, but please ask me questions about that. We were limited in this qualitative study in that we undertook only cross-sectional research. We were lucky to be able to work in 3 states, but in none of those states were we able to look at time trends at the facility level, the district level, and state level. And so really sort of more ethnographic implementation research, I think, would really show how these things evolve and change over time and what we weren't able to see in the short moments that we were there. Our focus, because of its linkage to universal health coverage, is on public services delivery, but something in the order of 80 to 90% of care seeking in India is in the private sector. In Delhi, we managed to speak to a few private physicians, but really, for a more complete picture of what integration looks like in Indian states, you would have to go to the private sector as well. As I mentioned at the outset of this presentation, our focus has really been on service delivery. But of course, there are much, much larger issues of how education and pedagogy in integration should take place, what research is needed, what is evidence-based medicine in a TCAM context, is it even a legitimate expectation to have in India, and those kinds of things. So we've sort of begun to scratch the surface of these ideas, but really our focus was somewhat narrow. That being said, of course, my first recommendation of future strategic directions would be more research. We feel that implementation research is especially important and has a lot of validity in the context of this particular topic because it allows you, rather than trying to randomize or, I mean, certainly those sort of methodologies have their place, but to really understand what people's experiences are on the ground, not just of patients, but also of practitioners, I think is critical to think about the idea of integration. What do people actually do, and what do they think about that? We felt, based on these findings, that incentivizing interaction across and within systems is very important. People feel like this is either not possible, or that others are not amenable to this. And so certainly if the directorates and ministries are creating opportunities for interaction and incentivizing them in the form of, sort of continuing medical education, which in some form does happen in India, or in other forms or special platforms, that could be really useful in improving cross-referral trust and understanding across systems. We were very struck that personal initiatives have gone a long way in improving access for patients and role performance of practitioners across states, and we felt that this should be rewarded. I mean, we were really inspired by some of the stories and the length at which people go to afford access and to provide services in India. India suffers, and I think I can make this blanket statement across the country. This is a rare chance that one has to say that. There are major gaps in service delivery and in governance of health systems across the country. And so really those basic things that matter in general matter for TCAM integration as well. Improving human resource quantity, that is the number of practitioners, quality, that is clarity on what their roles are, what their accreditation is, and those kinds of things. and their welfare, that they're getting all that they need to be able to do what they're supposed to. And then, of course, supporting infrastructure and drug availability is essential. If you're always going to have a homeopath sitting on the third floor and your Ayurved sitting on the fourth floor, it's not really a way to give them a role for chronic conditions and osteoarthritic conditions and things like that. We have to think about that more intelligently. We found that patient choice as an idea, whether it's people talking about this notion of the cafeteria approach or people saying, you know, they go here for this and there for that, is a very important sort of meme or idea to build upon. How can we operationalize patient choice? What does it really mean at the facility level, at the systems level? We feel that that's an important hook for India to think about in terms of integration. And one thing that's very key and was part of the recommendations of the high-level expert group on universal health coverage in India is that you shouldn't have to only be an MD to have a leadership position in the health system. In fact, we do need more homeopaths, we do need more Unani practitioners operating as health system actors, making policies and deciding what happens with health reform in India. And so we feel that that needs to be encouraged at the highest level as well. Luckily, there is support for this, in part because there are practitioners, there are homeopaths serving, in key advisory roles for the Indian Planning Commission and so on. So that's an encouraging and possibly actionable future direction. So I look forward to your questions, and thank you for your time.